It's Wednesday, October 21st, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. It's been quite a bit of fun over the last couple of days since President Obama released that memo. Seems like everybody's talking about marijuana, and one person who had to chime in on it was an opinion writer at the Washington Post named Charles Lane. And his article was about why the medical marijuana movement insults our intelligence. It's way too big, and I get a little too angry for me to recount this on the Daily Audio Stash, but if you'd like to read my takedown of Charles Lane from the Washington Post, please check out the article at stash.normal.org. There's also an article up at the Christian Science Monitor that warns us against medical marijuana and how that's going to lead to legalization. They point out how those of us who support medical marijuana also support legalization. I'm always astounded by that line of reasoning that we can't have medical marijuana because then that will lead to legalization. So how is that once we allow some people to use marijuana, suddenly the entire public will vote for everyone to use marijuana? Isn't that tacitly admitting that you can't keep it illegal unless it's kept in the dark and people are ignorant of it and thrown in prisons for using it? Doesn't it kind of say that if the general public saw people using medical marijuana and getting benefit from it and not seeing any major social problems from it, that they might be more amenable to legalization? I mean, really, doesn't saying that medical marijuana is the camel's nose under the tent undercut your own arguments against marijuana?
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
Time to take a look at your cannabis community calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Important note for tomorrow, Thursday, October 22nd. This comes from DeJ Couty from the Patients Advocacy Network. She's a frequent guest here on the Stash, and telling us that medical cannabis patients and their advocates are holding rallies and conducting actions in Los Angeles, San Francisco, San Diego, and Riverside, California tomorrow, responding to rogue law enforcement. Contact DeJ Couty at 323-334-5282. The website is cannabissaveslives.com. Los Angeles will be rallying at the Los Angeles City Hall, 215 to 330. In San Francisco, rallying at the Congressional Office of Nancy Pelosi at 97th Street. That is number 97th Street, San Francisco. In San Diego, they'll be rallying at the California Narcotics Officers Association's award ceremony at the DoubleTree Hotel, 5:30 to 8 p.m. And in Riverside, they'll be rallying at the Riverside County Courthouse, 5 p.m. to 6:15 p.m. If you need any information on that, contact DeJ Couty at Patients Advocacy Network at 323-334-5282. On Friday, the Cypress Hill Smokeout is taking place in San Bernardino, California at the San Manimal Amphitheater. See guerrillaunion.com/smokeout for more details. Takes place on Friday and Saturday, featuring bands like Cypress Hill, Cottonmouth Kings, Method Man and Redman, Sublime, and Cheech and Chong. I'll be appearing on Saturday at a legalization panel being moderated by Steve Bloom from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Also on Saturday, October 24th, Oregon Normal holds their twice-monthly cardholders meeting at the Village Ballroom, 700 Northeast Deakin in Portland, Oregon. You do need to be a medical marijuana cardholder to attend. And Normal Nebraska holds their Omaha Open Meeting. This will be at McFoster's Natural Kind Cafe in Omaha. Check the calendar for times and maps to these locations. And Normal Show Live will be on the air at 6 p.m. Saturday, bringing you audio from the Cypress Hill Smokeout. To get your events listed on the Cannabis Community Calendar, send me an email at stash@normal.org, and we'll put your chapter's events on the calendar. It's a Normal shout-out. Our shout-outs today go to a few different places. First of all, Las Vegas, Nevada. We used to have a Nevada Normal chapter, but there's been kind of a falling out with the board of directors, so we're reforming Nevada Normal, and we're looking for people in Las Vegas who might be interested in putting that back together. We're also looking to form a chapter in the Reno area of Nevada, so folks up there in Washoe County, send me an email at stash@normal.org. We've got folks in Kentucky that are looking to put a chapter together. We've got three of them that are really dedicated to the idea, just looking for the other two. So if you're in Kentucky, send me an email. And folks in Maryland, we've got a small group that's been put together, ready to get started, just looking for a few more members. So send me an email at stash@normal.org. Also, if you'd like to have your area of the country or your college called out here on the Daily Audio Stash to help you get a Normal chapter formed, send me an email at stash@normal.org. Now, coming up on your Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines, including another look at so-called stiletto stoners, or women who are in support of marijuana legalization. This time, Salon, the online magazine, takes a look at Jessica Corey in a piece called Meet the Marijuana Moms. This follows up on a Kathleen Parker piece in the Washington Post, also featuring Jessica Corey. You can read about that at stash.normal.org. And a couple of pieces from San Bernardino. First, a warning from the San Bernardino law enforcement agencies about the Cypress Hill Smokeout. And then a city supervisor in San Bernardino goes off on a fit of reefer madness. For our Daily Toker Tunes, we are presenting the best of the music we've played over the past year and a half. And this time we give you the blues with Rex P. Clem and the song The Weed Is What I Need. And for our cannabis science segment today, we present Dr. Mitch Earlywine back once again to discuss the recent polling from Gallup and others on the legalization of marijuana and how he sees the social trends playing out. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Salon invites you to, quote, Meet the Marijuana Moms, end quote. From Salon.com. Who do you imagine spoke at September's 38th Annual National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws Conference in San Francisco? Perhaps some comedians? Some aging hippie drug policy wonks? A High Times staffer or two? Well, yes. All of those people took their turn at the mic. Well, yes, and more than a few prominent defense attorneys, medical doctors, research scientists, professional athletes, and journalists. Go on. But so did Jessica Corey, who describes herself as a Republican mom. According to the Washington Post's Kathleen Parker, Corey stepped up to the podium, quote, wearing an American flag lapel pin, a triple strand of pearls, and a gold marijuana leaf pin, end quote. Quote, if we believe that smaller government is better government, we must trust people to choose what they put into their bodies. If we support legalized access to alcohol, cigarettes, and 700-calorie cheeseburgers, we should legalize marijuana, a far less harmful substance, end quote, said Corey. But honestly, Parker and Corey don't entirely sell me on the idea that marijuana is becoming a women's issue. Sure, the connections between responsible parenting and attitudes toward criminalization of the drug, in both its recreational and medical capacities, are growing clearer. Yet for me, the toking point Parker is talking about doesn't seem particularly gender-based. That a self-described Republican mom advocates legalization is, more than anything, a sign that the issue is gaining mainstream support. Across the political spectrum, normal is finally becoming more, well, normal. No, actually, normal has always been very normal. It's just that our mainstream supporters could not openly admit their support. We've always had doctors, lawyers, teachers, students, police, soldiers, Republicans, Democrats, moms, dads, grandmas, and grandpas on our side, but only the hippies were brave enough and or had nothing to lose by openly supporting cannabis re-legalization. San Bernardino police issue warning to attendees of this weekend's Cypress Hill Smokeout. From the High Desert Daily Press. Those hoping to attend Friday and Saturday's Cypress Hill Smokeout and participate in the recreational use of smoking marijuana should think again. Deputies from the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department and officers from the California Highway Patrol will staff the Cypress Hill Smokeout as a constant reminder that smoking the drug for recreational use is illegal. All sections of the California Penal Code, Health and Safety Code, and California Vehicle Code will be strictly enforced.
Marijuana is a narcotic, medically and legally. It never did anybody any good and does everybody a lot of harm.
From the Inland Valley Daily Bulletin, quote, the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department wishes to remind concertgoers that while state law makes provision for the possession, use, and cultivation of limited amounts of marijuana for medicinal purposes, it does not allow the recreational use of the drug, end quote, officials wrote in a statement. Quote, further, there is no provision in the law for the use of marijuana while operating a motor vehicle, whether someone possesses a doctor's recommendation for the drug or not, end quote. Promoter Live Nation has booked acts including Cypress Hill, Method Man and Red Man, and Cheech and Chong.
Attention all criminals and traffic scofflaws in the San Bernardino area. This weekend, the Sheriff's Department and Highway Patrol will be very busy catching people smoking marijuana at a Cypress Hill, Method Man and Red Man, Cheech and Chong, Sublime, Cottonmouth Kings concert. Do not commit crimes or violate traffic laws in areas away from the San Manuel Amphitheater while a large share of the law enforcement resources are dedicated to preventing pot smoking at a smokeout. Your cooperation is appreciated.
Marijuana is an addictive drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Reaper Madness.
San Bernardino County Supervisor Brad Mitzelfeldt's Reefer Madness defense of banning medical marijuana dispensaries. It's long, and it's rambling, and it's chock full of reefer madness. It's an op-ed called In Defense of Banning Marijuana Dispensaries by San Bernardino County Supervisor Brad Mitzelfeldt, a man who took a sacred oath to protect and defend the good people of San Bernardino, a point he makes twice. He's only doing it for your own good, you see. You can read the entire thing at stash.normal.org, but you can get the distilled O de Guana Loco out of just two paragraphs.
However, the real issue here is that the medical marijuana movement is a fraud. The majority of medical marijuana cardholders in the state of California are under the age of 30. How many of them actually have serious illnesses other than drug addiction? Even if they were truly sick, there are no credible studies demonstrating the medical benefits of marijuana.
I guess in San Bernardino, people under age 30 don't get epilepsy, cancer, irritable bowel, glaucoma, fibromyalgia, crushed vertebrae, migraine headaches, post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety disorder, AIDS, or any other number of diseases and conditions medical cannabis can alleviate. Diseases and conditions that don't necessarily put you in a wheelchair or make you look visibly sick or disabled. And even if they are truly sick, since Brad can't be bothered by 17,000 credible studies on cannabis and cannabinoids, let them take Vicodin or something instead of a legal, non-toxic herb.
The case against marijuana is most clear when the mental abilities of a lifelong marijuana smoker are observed. In fact, I will take this argument one step further. While many ill people believe their symptoms can be alleviated by smoking marijuana, the political movement behind legalizing medical marijuana is the same movement that seeks to legalize the drug for recreational use.
Well, the mental abilities of this lifelong marijuana smoker are taxed trying to understand Brad's reasoning. Why would people like me, who want to legalize marijuana for all people, not support legalizing marijuana for sick people? Why would sick people, who want to legalize marijuana for themselves, support locking up other pot smokers for being too healthy? And do you mean that we can't allow people to self-medicate with a non-toxic herb because some of them might enjoy it? By the way, I want to form a new elite team of competitors called the Cannabrains. We go to places like San Bernardino and challenge people like Brad Mitzelfeldt to whichever test of mental abilities he chooses against one of our Cannabrain lifelong marijuana smoker teammates. For example, he could play chess against chess master Ben Mazel from our Madison, Wisconsin affiliate. I'm pretty handy at pop culture trivia. Cannabis Carry is kick-ass at Boggle. Are there any more volunteers for the Cannabrains? Maybe we could seriously challenge these people and play the games online. Some of the most brilliant people I know are lifelong stoners, which makes sense when you figure intelligent people would gravitate toward the least harmful, most fulfilling recreational substance.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So, to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome.
One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling while promoting the message of reform. To donate your song for possible use on the stash, enter it in the next Marijuana Music Awards contest today. As Rocktober here at the Stash rolls on, we look back to an old Blue Monday song that speaks volumes about the alcohol versus cannabis debate. Hey, if marijuana is safer, then why are we driving people to drink? We return to July 2008 for this blues song. Turning to alcohol because there's no safe cannabis available is certainly a subject for the blues, and today Rex P. Clem gives us his take on these kinds of blues with his song, The Weed Is What I Need. Indiana-born Rex P. Clem began his musical career performing in the local honky-tonks of his central Indiana home at the age of 13. He has shared the stage with some incredible players, writers, and singers, some well-known and some that should be. Rex has opened shows for country artists such as David Allan Coe, Vince Gill, Brad Paisley, Reba McEntire, Holly Dunn, Lee Greenwood, and worked with artists like the Marshall Tucker Band, Blackfoot, and Molly Hatchet. Rex now lives in the songwriting mecca, Nashville, Tennessee. A blues man with his roots in country music, he continues to play on numerous sessions, as well as writing and pitching songs of his own. He plays music and teaches bass guitar in Nashville. Visit his MySpace page at myspace.com/RexPClem for more information and great music from this country blues man. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Rex P. Clem with The Weed Is What I Need.
Jack Daniels at night. Sometimes need a little vodka to make me feel all right. Lately I've been drinking the Captain's Parrot Bay rum, but I just called my dealer, said, man, you gotta get me some, 'cause the weed is what I need. The weed is what I need. All this liquor's gonna kill me, 'cause the weed is what I need. First time that I tried it, I was a much younger man. And now I wanna do it anytime that I can. Some folks think it's bad, well, I think that they're wrong. Hell, I like it so much, I just had to write this song. 'Cause the weed is what I need. The weed is what I need. All this liquor's gonna kill me, 'cause the weed is what I need. Oh, give it to me, man. Feeling bad, just listen to me. I've got the answer for your relief. Don't drown in that whiskey, don't swim in that rum, just roll a fatty and smoke it till it's gone. 'Cause the weed is what I need. The weed is what I need. All this liquor's gonna kill me, 'cause the weed is what I need.
what I need. The weed is what I need. All this liquor's gonna kill me, cause the weed is what I need. All this liquor's gonna kill me, cause the weed is what I need. What I need, all right.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. NORML is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at NORML.org, that's NORML.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORML.
Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with NORML's look at cannabis science.
Well, we're back here in the home office, and that means we're back to our regular schedule of interviews, and that means here on Wednesday we get to speak with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from the State University of New York at Albany, and welcome back, Dr. Mitch.
Great to be back.
It's a busy, busy time. I talked about this yesterday on The Stash, how Alan St. Pierre and Keith Stropp were just inundated, something like a 20-hour day they had to work in doing all their media calls and appearances on shows. Did you get a similar sort of situation from that Obama administration memo on Monday?
Indeed, I was pleased to get so much media contact, and it's nice to see them actually paying attention to this in ways that I wouldn't have anticipated before.
Yeah, I got calls even. They are trying to get a hold of the Oregon NORML people, and they were so busy on their phone calls that they finally went through the list and got to me. So even I was on the radio talking about this yesterday. As far as this this determination here that the administration says they won't go after the state, the people in the states that are following state law, how do you think that portends for the states that don't have medical marijuana? Do you think they're going to, you know, jump a little bit more into this? I know they're trying to get it up there in New York.
I think the opportunity there now for states that have been concerned in the past, saying, oh, what about federal law? What about federal law? To essentially lay that concern on the table. This isn't really going to be the issue it was under the Bush administration and shouldn't inhibit states from, you know, giving the sickest of the sick the opportunity to get the medicine they need.
Yeah, I'm hoping it will embolden some of these guys that are on the fence, always talking about, well, you know, it's against federal law. Well, it's still against federal law, but now you don't have to worry so much about that federal law.
Well, and even some states where there isn't a good way to get cannabis in the hands of those folks who are really in need, even if they do have medical cannabis laws, I think they will also benefit from this in the sense that now they're probably going to be more willing to entertain options that they might have been frightened about before.
Yeah, I would hope so. And anybody out there listening to us, please get in touch with your legislators. We've got the tools at NORML.org for you to do it. Just look on the right-hand side for a little icon that says change your laws. This also comes on the heels of a new Gallup poll that shows the highest ever support. And I hate that they use that in the headline, but the highest ever support for marijuana legalization, now ranking in at like 44%. And I was discussing this with Paul Armentano, and he kind of noted how the biggest jump when you look at the crosstabs is in female support for marijuana legalization. And we've recently seen those articles in Marie Claire and Elle Magazine where women are coming more out of the closet. How do you think this, have you seen this in your research, women increasingly accepting marijuana, and how do you think the impact of women's coming out of the closet will have on this issue?
This is an intriguing set of issues, really. I had a letter to the editor in the Albany Times Union about this, and neighboring folks, actually more women than men, mentioned that they saw it and were on my side, which I thought was intriguing. I think there was a time when cannabis use in women had negative connotations that, thank goodness, it doesn't have anymore. So even when you look at the way people assess problem cannabis use, we've seen that some of the questionnaires that are often used are kind of biased against women. My student Allison Luby has a paper on that, and it's been wonderful to do that kind of work in my lab. And that as soon as you stop, you know, having these weird sexist stereotypes about what women should or shouldn't do, lo and behold, the way to assess problems becomes much less biased, and suddenly we're seeing an opportunity for women to step up and say, hey, we're behind this, and in fact, we know how to vote.
Yeah, you know, you brought something up about your student writing this paper where the polls seem to be biased against women, and I'm often recounting Gallup polls and other information, and I often tell people that depending on how you word the question can make a great difference in how well you get support for marijuana legalization. So what are some examples of that? How does a test become biased, or a poll become biased against women?
So it's intriguing, but what I'll usually do is take all the other items on a questionnaire and say, if they're matched on this, but there's a gender difference on the problem one, then we know that clearly there must be some kind of bias. So a couple of years back, I had one on cannabis and schizotypy, and it turned out all to be biased against cannabis users because of the wording of some of the questions. It's funny, but you know, what a surprise that cannabis users endorse an item that said, I use words in unusual ways, which was interpreted as schizotypal.
Oh, gnarly, when, dude.
Yeah, basically anybody who's ever kicked back with his homies at 420.
Exactly. You know,
he can use words in unusual ways. And comparable things with the questionnaires on the assessments of problems with women. So they say, you know, has this created a problem with your partner? Women tend to endorse that more readily than men do. And some of the depression questionnaires, they'll ask about crying. And, you know, invariably, women endorse the crying items at a different rate from the way men do because of, you know, weird standards about gender in our society.
That's interesting. Now, are there any other type of demographic biases that you find against younger people taking polls or based on, you know, religious affiliation or anything else like that?
In fact, age is a real key issue as far as the diagnosis of dependence via questionnaire. So nobody really does dependence unless they have a full-blown interview, but a lot of these questionnaires that try to do it more briefly seem to be biased against younger users. Younger users have a different understanding of what tolerance is, for example, and may report it at rates that are inconsistent with what older users would report it as. And that, of course, then tends to make it look like they're experiencing more dependence when, in fact, it's probably stemming from the way these items work against them.
You know, another thing when we talk about statistics and polling and surveying and research, you know, when I discuss this topic with people, a lot of times, you know, I'll say, you know, 44% of people now support legalization, or I'll say, you know, 28% of young people between 18 and 25 will use marijuana at least once a year. And a lot of times the reaction I'll get from people is, wow, that's way low. It can't be that low. Everybody I know thinks it should be legal. Everybody I know smokes. So is there an underreporting on this polling? Is there any way to test for that?
There are two things going on with this. First of all, there's this phenomenon in social psychology called assumed similarity. Yes, I think everybody's a 5'9" bearded Jewish marijuana researcher. You know, we often assume that other people hold the attitudes that we hold just as part of being human. And then, in fact, when we get, you know, evidence to the contrary, it's hard to absorb that sometimes. But also, these polls are generally done on the phone. And who wants to say on the phone, hey, yeah, I'm all for legalization, if you have any fear at all that this could somehow turn into some kind of weird Patriot Act at the feds knocking on your door. Mm-hmm. And so I do feel like that these are modest but real underestimates of the actual rates of support for this. But what translates into actual voting is also different, too. So if you have things polling nicely, it still doesn't mean that all those folks end up showing up when it's time to cast their ballot.
Good point. And especially with the phone point, I can imagine a guy who's got a plant in his closet and a couple of ounces in the desk drawer might have some suspicions about who's calling him on the phone to ask about marijuana. That's a really good point there. But there's no real way of quantifying that, of being able to say it's 5% low, 10% low, no way really to know.
I mean, I've done it some in my work where you try to make it as anonymous as possible and compare it to the other versions and get some feel for what that variable is. But my work is primarily in college students, and they don't have this same bias. An anonymous questionnaire to a college student, do you support legalization? You know, my rates are above 80%.
Sure.
It's just nowhere near the same kind of bias that you would get in a phone survey.
Is there anything out there as far as when these big organizations like Gallup, Rasmussen, and so on are doing polling on marijuana that you find problematic in the way that they ask the questions or that the way they build their samples?
I mean, they do exactly what they're told. So Allison Luby again and Dale and I collaborated on one, and we literally just said, would you support a tax and regulated market? And then the other version was, would you support it if you knew there was a good roadside sobriety test for cannabis intoxication?
Hmm.
And somehow adding that extra part on the second one increased people's willingness to support it. Well, there is a good roadside sobriety test for cannabis intoxication. So, like, it's too bad that we have to sort of remind them that there are all these good things and that we're really ready for a tax and regulated market. But if that gets more and more people to say yes, by all means, let's throw that in there.
No, absolutely. One last thing here. You know, one of the big impacts of this war on marijuana users, of course, has been workplace and school place drug testing. And now that we're seeing this change in people's attitudes toward legalization and more states medicalizing the use of marijuana, do you see this drug testing regime going anywhere anytime soon?
You know, I went to the Office of National Drug Control Policy's drug testing summit, and, you know, I was sort of the mole, the spy, but these people really think this is the path to greatness. They think everybody should be taking this. They think high school teachers should do it just to be good role models. I mean, it's completely unrelated to concern about job performance or anything like that. It's like suddenly the content of your PE is the content of your character. And there's always going to be this subset of folks who are really hard to convince. Fortunately, data are coming out time and again, and my student Sarah Smucker has a chapter on this in Pot Politics. Basically, particularly in high tech and in industries where, you know, your brains and creativity really matter, they're discovering that this really hurts their applicant pool if you become an organization notorious for drug testing. And in some situations, they just end up losing the folks who they would normally want to have. In addition, you lose all this time for, you know, somebody who should be sitting down writing code or doing real work is, you know, standing in the bathroom with somebody watching them.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You know, I worked in those industries in IT, and a drug test in IT is what led me to doing this. The thought that, like you say, the content of the P was more important than the content of my coding, I guess is the way I would have put it. But Dr. Earlywine, I always love talking to you on these Wednesdays. We have so many things to discuss, but if you're listening out there and want to get your questions in, we do take questions by email, and we'll bring them up here on the show. Just send the email to 420research@gmail.com, and who knows, maybe your idea becomes the subject for the next study or the next survey that Dr. Earlywine does. Before we let you go, Dr. Mitch, I want to get an update on your books as far as the ones you've written or that are coming out, if you need to let people know how to get a hold of them.
Absolutely. So actually, Amazon has Understanding Marijuana on a special sale right now, the paperback version, and Pot Politics is there as well. Then my new book on substance abuse treatment is brief but also inexpensive, and that's at least $2 off. And finally, I just got a contract with Springer to write a book about humor, which I know may not be the ultimate interest of everybody on the podcast, but I'm happy to be doing it. And if anybody sees any good cannabis-related jokes and wants to forward them along, by all means, please do.
Oh, I think there's a certain columnist in Vallejo who has a few pot-related jokes. Maybe you can get him to send them to you. Thanks so much, Dr. Mitch. We'll talk to you again next week, and take care.
Take care.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a surprise programming note. Remember me yesterday saying there'd be no Thursday stash? Well, guess what? There's going to be a Thursday stash. Thanks to the great work by our new editor, Jack, he's made it possible for me to pre-record some of my pieces and be able to get them out on the stash when they need to go out. So tonight, Wednesday night, I'm going to record the news for tomorrow. He'll get it all mixed together for us, and I'll get it posted on the regular Thursday time. Tomorrow you'll be hearing the California Marijuana Report with Eric Brenner and the second part of the interview with Steve Cubby. Thanks for downloading the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews that you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.